Okay, so yeah, I appreciate the chance to talk here. And I'm going to follow Neil, and I'm going to talk about ADS-CFT in a cosmology conference. And what are the reasons for talking about ADS-CFT in this context? Really, it's for the reasons that Neil said. There's a missing piece in our understanding of the predictions for inflation. And that missing piece is an understanding of what were the initial conditions for slow roll inflation. Now, a lot of people have their own favorite ideas about what those initial conditions are. My personal favorite idea is that what was happening before slow roll inflation was eternal inflation, and that slow roll inflation started with some kind of tunneling event. If this is the right theory of the beginning of slow roll inflation, then there are certain observational signatures we can look for, like negative spatial curvature or bubble collisions. Neil's opinion is that the initial conditions for inflation are so fine-tuned that we should throw the entire theory out. And there's a reason you're here. Now I don't just get to make up whatever you think. Yeah, is there technology that alerts you when people are discussing you? But there's a reason that we can't resolve this, and basically, what I would say is that we need quantum gravity in order to answer this question. And that's why it's stuck at the level of debate. And it's an answer that could have observational consequences. Now, one thing that people sometimes do is they try to build models of inflation in string theory. And that's a very interesting thing to do. So the general approach is you start with your favorite string compactification. You try to build some model of inflation. And what you have at the end is basically some effective field theory description that's derived from this string compactification. And then, making an assumption about initial conditions, you can derive things like the slow roll parameters. But this sort of approximation is not sufficient to address this question of initial conditions. One example is that at this level of doing semi-classical gravity and effective field theory, we can describe tunneling back and forth between different vacua. So we can describe eternal inflation semi-classically. But we don't have the full quantum gravity description. And that leads to, and when we try to compute in the semi-classical description, things like the probability for different initial conditions, we run into divergences. And I think there's similar problems that affect other proposals for the initial conditions. Okay, so this is something where we really need the full quantum gravity description of cosmology. Okay? So, or we could say, and often the quantum gravity description is holographic, so we could say we need the holographic description of cosmology. And you know, so far there's not anything that looks too weird in the CMB, but these low L anomalies are kind of an extra motivation to try to look for these initial conditions. They're probably nothing. I have no even hand-waving argument that something about quantum gravity is going to explain them. But it really just emphasizes the fact that our theory is not complete until we have a theory of initial conditions. Okay, but I'm not going to answer that question today. I'm going to try to move in this direction of a quantum gravity description. And what we have in string theory is we have an excellent holographic description of asymptotically ADS spaces. In the form of this ADS-CFT correspondence. Unfortunately, our cosmology is not asymptotically anti-de Sitter, and so this correspondence is not directly useful to us. So this is a picture of anti-de Sitter space. So anti-de Sitter space is infinite in space as well as time, but light can get to the boundary in a finite amount of time. And so this is a conformal diagram for de Sitter space, where this is the bulk inside the cylinder. And the CFT, in some sense, lives on the boundary of the cylinder, as I'm sure you've heard before. So the program that I want to talk about a little bit is to learn from ADS-CFT about holography in general. Because if we really understood how holography worked in ADS-CFT, then we would be able to apply it in more general situations. Instead, what we have is we have kind of this magical correspondence between a field theory and a theory in the bulk, but we don't really understand very much about the mapping between them. And a particular example of something that we don't understand, so there have been something like 10,000 papers about ADS-CFT, but here's a question you might like to know the answer to. So suppose you have some region in the bulk like this, just some finite region in the middle of ADS. And we want to know the question of what CFT degrees of freedom, or just say, what CFT information encodes this region? And this is a question that we really have a very little idea about what the answer is. And if we knew the answer to this question, you see, then we would be in a much better situation. Because if we knew what degrees of freedom described a region that was away from the boundary, then we would be able to move away from these asymptotically ADS boundary conditions. Just as an aside, that's not particularly related to cosmology, but this whole question about firewalls, you know, we can ask this question in the context of ADS. You could have a black hole in ADS, and you can ask about an infalling observer in ADS, and you would think, because we have ADS-CFT, you could quickly answer the question of whether an observer falling into an ADS black hole runs into a firewall or not. And, well, that's the very interesting talk that we heard yesterday. But, in fact, we don't understand enough about ADS-CFT for people to agree on what the answer is to that question. Okay, so it's something that's at the edges of what we know how to ask in ADS-CFT. Okay. So what I have in mind is what I want to do is first tell you about a special case where we know the answer. And then I want to tell you about some hints of a more general answer. And at the end, we'll come to a fun puzzle, which is related to this question. And, well, I wanted to mention that, I mean, most people here are not ADS-CFT experts, and my goal is not to give a talk for the experts, but to explain to people who don't always think about ADS-CFT what these results are. And so I would encourage you to interrupt and ask me when something is not clear. Okay, so first let me just tell you about the simple case where the answer is known. Okay, so here's one drawing in the global coordinates of ADS. And if we would draw it on at some time t equals, let's say t equals 0, then we would just have space. And space is an infinite hyperbolic space, which you can conformally map to a sphere. Now, you can do a different conformal mapping, which is going to be easier for me to draw. And we're going to instead use this picture of ADS, where and the kind of the natural coordinates for this conformal mapping. Can people see this part of the blackboard? Sort of. Okay. Does it need to be bigger? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, the ball. Sorry, that you map the interior to the ball and the boundary to the sphere. There are also some empty seats here, but let me try to. Okay, so a natural metric. So instead of the ball, you can also use the plane. So we have these field theory directions t, x, and y. In this case, I'm talking about kind of the conventional situation where we have a four-dimensional anti-de Sitter space and a three-dimensional conformal field theory. Right, so instead of using this picture, I'm going to use a different picture where the boundary looks like this. So these coordinates are t here, x in this direction, and z in this direction. And I haven't drawn y. Okay, so this is z equals 0. That's the boundary. And then the rest of the space-time is to the right of this plane. Okay? That's the description at where you include time. And there's a similar description if we just draw space. So then I'd like to draw it like this. And I'd like to draw z going up. And this is, again, the boundary, z equals 0. And then we have x and we have y. OK, now I can tell you about the simple case where we know which CFT degrees of freedom describe a given bulk region. And that's the case where this bulk region has this simple form. It looks like that. Okay, so this is this bulk region that I'm going to call B. And on the z equals 0 slice, we have a boundary. So this is a special kind of bulk region that extends all the way out to the boundary. Okay? And in this case, it's basically known that the CFT restricted to this boundary region B is dual to the bulk region, capital B. Okay? And this was something that was carefully described in a paper by Cassini, Huerta, and Rob a few years ago. Okay, so in this case, it didn't have to be that simple. But in this case, there's a surprisingly simple answer to the question of which CFT degrees of freedom correspond to a given bulk region. It's a simple geometrical answer. If you're restricting the bulk to this geometrical region, capital B, then that's equivalent to restricting to the boundary to the region, small b. Let me just draw the same thing on this diagram that includes time. All right. So here's the region small b. Here's the region capital B. So this is just a statement at a single time. But a natural thing to do is to extend these into space-time regions. Okay? So if you know the physics on this surface, then you also know the physics in the future light cone of that surface. Okay? So just on the boundary, you can extend that into a diamond. And similarly, you can extend that into a wedge in the bulk. Let me try that one more time, sorry. So we have this boundary diamond here. That's kind of the natural region that's associated to the spatial surface B. And then that extends into the bulk, into this wedge. Okay. Is it clear at least what the statement is of this correspondence? Because, well, it's very simple, but my drawing is not always perfect, and there's a lot of different directions going on here. I mean, some people are so impatient. I mean, it's a true statement. I completely agree. So this is one case that we know, and the whole idea is to move in the direction of the thing that we wanted. In particular, what's unfortunate about this situation is we can only talk about bulk regions that extend all the way to the boundary. So we're still completely tied to these ADS asymptotics. Okay. Okay. So now let's ask about more generally what the situation is. Is it true more generally that a geometric subregion of the boundary corresponds to a geometric subregion of the bulk? And there's a suggestion that this it's not really proven, but there's a simple proposal, which may be correct. And that proposal is the following. Let me again draw the picture where t equals 0, and we have z, x, and y. If you take any old region B on the boundary, so I'm still not quite doing the thing that you would like to do, but I'm doing the thing that I can do, and then you extend it into the bulk by finding a minimal surface, like that. That's right. So given some spatial region here, we define this to be a minimal surface. And we define the region B to be the region inside that minimal surface. So if I restrict to t equals 0, it's a minimal surface. More generally, you will have a covariant description where it's an extremal surface. But let me draw this on one time slice here. Okay, and so the basic idea is that the CFT restricted to this region B corresponds to the bulk region B, capital B, which is bounded by the minimal surface. Now, this is not something that we really know to be true. It might seem a little too simple to be true, that, you know, when people first started talking about ADS CFT, there was no guarantee that a geometrical region in the boundary has to correspond to a geometrical region in the bulk. But there is some evidence that this is the case. And I can tell you what that evidence is. So first of all, this bulk region, you could ask the question of the entanglement of that bulk region with the rest of the bulk. Okay? Yeah?
So you said more generally,
Here we were talking, yeah, sorry, I should have been clearer here. This was a special case where this region is a circle. Okay, this is, yeah, that's a major oversight. Okay, so this is the case of, let's call it a disk. Okay, for the disk, there's basically a proof. All right, well, the disk and the bulk should also be in the vacuum. Okay, and so in the case that the boundary region is a disk, and the bulk state is the vacuum, so empty ADS, then this is known. Okay. It is minimal, yes. Yeah, I'm sorry, this was a... Thank you for asking. Yeah, this is still a minimal surface. All right, so in this case, the minimal surface prescription can basically be proven. Yeah, the bulk should really be just empty ADS. Yeah. Okay. Now, this is possibly true more generally, where there's no such restriction on the shape of this surface or the state in the bulk. Okay, it's not known. But let me say briefly what the evidence is. If you take this bulk region B, that bulk region is not going to be in a pure state, because stuff here is entangled with stuff that's outside the surface. And a measurement of how impure the state is the entanglement entropy. And it was recently argued in a paper by Bianchi and Rob with the fancy title of On the Architecture of Space-Time Geometry, that this entanglement entropy of a bulk region in the theory of gravity is given by the area of that surface. Divided by 4g, plus subleading corrections. Okay, so that would be the area of this surface here, the area of this minimal surface. Okay, so now why does that provide evidence for the conjecture? It's because we can also compute on the field theory side the entanglement entropy of that region. So that's a bulk computation. Then you can do a CFT computation. And the CFT computation was recently, so people like Ryu and Takayanagi suggested this a long time ago. And then a recent paper by Levkovich and Maldacena showed that the entanglement entropy computed in the CFT of some region B is given by the area of the minimal surface in the bulk. Okay, and so there's an agreement. So the idea that the CFT in B corresponds to this bulk region, there's one piece of evidence for that, which is that the entanglement entropy of this region seems to agree with the entanglement entropy of that region. Okay. So there's a, even at this point, it's not extremely relevant for cosmology, but it's already an extremely interesting question. Is there really this very simple geometrical correspondence? Okay, and it could be that this bulk surface, that the right way to think about it is more that it's like a saddle point computation of the entanglement entropy, and that this stronger statement may in fact be false. But I think it's very interesting either way to figure out whether this is the case. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to assume that this is true, and I'm going to try to move forward and see what else we can learn. Okay, so in order to learn a little more, I want to tell you about one other natural bulk region that you can associate with a boundary region. And this is the thing that's going to help us move a little bit away from the boundary, if I have time to get there. So there's another natural bulk. And this is the region that we'll call the causal wedge. And let me just try to make sure that you understand how this thing is defined, because so first, let me just draw a CFT picture. So here, z is the coordinate that goes into the bulk, is equal to 0. And I'm going to illustrate this for a simple case, which is the strip. OK, so here we have t, we have y, and we have z. And we have x here. So these are all just directions in the field theory. And then we want to take a strip like this. OK, this strip is at t equals 0. This is going to be our region. Now, in order to define how this goes into the bulk, we want to, again, construct this causal diamond-like thing on the boundary that's associated with B. OK, so if you know the data in here, then that allows you to construct the data in this entire region of the CFT by using the Hamiltonian. Unless you have a CFT that doesn't have a Hamiltonian, then you would be in trouble. OK, so this thing is not really what's conventionally, it's not the simplest kind of causal diamond, but it's something that I'll call a causal diamond here. OK, so given this region B, we then have this causal diamond on the boundary, whose height is determined by the width of that strip. All right, now we want to extend that into the bulk. And basically, we want to define the bulk points that can be probed by a time-like observer that starts and ends in this boundary diamond. OK, so let me draw a picture of what that looks like. So, but we're going to have to start suppressing some directions. So let's suppress this symmetry direction y, and keep. So let's draw the y equals 0 picture. So then we have t. So in this case, we have the boundary here. We have our. So now we're taking y equals 0, so we just have a slice through this, which is just an ordinary kind of diamond. And the z direction is this way, t and x. And this basically leads to this type of bulk wedge. OK, it's the points that you can get to starting from that boundary region. All right, so here's the z equals 0 picture. Here's the y equals 0 picture. And we can also draw this region at one time at t equals 0. So in this case, we want to have z in this direction and y and x. And then the boundary looks like this. We're considering this strip. And then it goes into the bulk like that. OK, so that's the bulk causal wedge. And that's basically the only other. So let me maybe draw on here. So here's the boundary region B. And here is the bulk region, which we'll call B tilde. It's the region inside the causal wedge. And those are basically the only two natural bulk regions that you can define that's associated to a given region of the boundary. There are only ones that are, you know, invariant under coordinate transformations and so on. Now this causal wedge, so let me ask. So Is the definition of the causal wedge clear? Okay. All right. yeah. So now, what can we say about this causal region? So first of all, this causal wedge, it was identified by several groups. The first was Busso, Leichenauer, and Rosenhaus. Also, Czech and collaborators, Bartek Czech and collaborators, and also Hubany and Rangamani. And all of these people identified this causal wedge as the minimal bulk region that has to be described by the CFT. Once the CFT is restricted to B. And that's basically because it's the region of the bulk that you can get to by starting in the CFT. So roughly, I mean, this is not a very convincing argument, but roughly you can think of starting in the CFT, going and finding out what's happening in the bulk there, and then coming back to the CFT, which basically means that this bulk stuff here should show up in correlation functions of the CFT operators. Okay? These people also made some quantitative calculations involving entropy bounds and so on. And the thing that we want to understand is what is the relationship between this causal wedge and the region that was bounded by the minimal surface. And let me just draw it in this simple case here. For the strip, what you can see is that the minimal surface actually goes farther into the bulk than the causal wedge. Okay, so we can also try to draw it on here. All right, so here's the minimal surface. Oh, I'm sorry, that was terrible. And let's see. Let's make one more picture that will not make my art skills so terrible. So let's actually set T and Y both equal to 0. And then we can just draw this region B. And here's the causal region, and here's the region that's bounded by the minimal surface. Okay? So in this picture, we have x and we have z. Yeah? Something like that. That's right. That's right. And these people compute it in all kinds of different cases. But it's a general fact that this minimal surface goes farther into the bulk. Okay, so now we want to understand, you know, what is the relationship between these two? And there's a hint here. You see, the region bounded by this minimal surface, this bigger region B, it contains points that are not really in causal contact with this diamond on the boundary. So in other words, if you put a source here, no local operator in this boundary region is going to know about that, because causality prevents things over here from getting into the diamond. Or if I draw it on here, I mean, here we don't have time, but the point is if you start a signal here, it's not going to get to the boundary before within this boundary region. It's going to get to the boundary over here. And so roughly what this is saying is that stuff within the causal wedge should show up in local operators in the CFT diamond that's defined by B. Okay, so the simple thing that we can hope is true is that the full CFT restricted to this region B corresponds to the bulk region B, capital B, that's bounded by the minimal surface. And that the information in the local correlators corresponds to this smaller bulk region. Okay. This is a simple thing, which, as far as I know, may be true. Okay. Is it clear at least what the statement is? Because this is my main goal, was to at least convey that there is a simple statement there that may be true. Yeah. That one? I mean, it's defined more generally than that. I haven't gotten to what we computed, but we computed things in the general situation. Yeah, people have computed things for these extremal surfaces more generally. So there's various literature on this subject, not very much about this causal wedge yet. People have done various things. They certainly haven't done only the strip. They've done a lot of different things, but there's still a lot more open questions. Okay, any other questions? All right, good. So once you have this cause, well, all right, I'll come to that in 1 second. 5 minutes? Oh, perfect, okay. Okay, so this is the basic idea, and now we'd like to know whether that idea is true, and we also want to extend this a little bit to address Neil's question. So first of all, in order to test this idea, we need to first of all make this thing a little bit more precise. And I'm not going to fully describe how to do that, but I'm going to describe a test that you can do. Because we can use the same type of test from before. We can compute in the bulk the entanglement entropy of this region B tilde. Okay? And using the results about the architecture of space-time geometry, then this is also equal to the area of this causal surface in Planck units, plus subleading corrections. Okay? So basically, there's a computation that can be done, which is, so you can compute these areas from the bulk, and then you can try in the CFT to only look at the information contained in the local correlation functions and see if that agrees. Okay, so the basic idea is that given the density matrix of the CFT in this region B, then we throw away the non-local information to define some density matrix rho tilde. Now, which non-local information? For example, big Wilson loops in here can't be measured by anybody in the CFT. Those won't show up in local CFT operators. Okay, so that's the type of information that you could throw away. And that would give a rho tilde. And then the thing that needs to be checked is whether the entanglement entropy of this rho tilde is equal to the area of the causal surface. Okay, so in view of the time, I mean, so this is, first of all, this needs to be made more precise, and we do have some, we took some steps in that direction, but let me not go into that right now. And the other thing that we did is we computed the log divergent, the universal log divergent terms in the area of the causal surface. So there's various interesting checks that you can do here. But, you know, since Neil is paying for the hotel, let's address Neil's question, which is after all, one of the most interesting things. So once you have this idea of restricting a CFT to local operators in this causal wedge, you can consider a different type of region on the boundary. And this was something that was done by Jan de Boer, Balasubramanian. And I don't know to what extent that they have a paper out, and I don't know if all of this is in the paper, but okay, so there's a paper by these people, and they consider this type of region on the boundary. It's a region that covers all of space, but it's only extended in a finite amount of time. Now that sort of region, if you then construct the causal wedge according to the same rule, it will look something like this. Okay, so in other words, this region here has a causal wedge, and now we've divided the bulk in two along a surface that doesn't extend to the boundary. And then again, the idea is that the local CFT operators in here encode the bulk physics out near the boundary. And then everything else in here must encode the bulk physics that's in the interior. Okay, so it's an extremely convenient description of these degrees of freedom. All you do is you take the CFT, then you throw away everything that's easy to think about, and then whatever's left describes the interior of the bulk. Okay, but this is still at a very speculative stage. So I didn't have a chance to tell you many of the hints and quantitative results, but I hope I illustrated that. You know, there's elementary questions in ADS CFT that we want to know the answers to for many reasons. And addressing those questions will also give us clues about the holographic description of cosmology. Thanks.
A very naive question. So if we consider evolution inside bulk region, and how does it encode it in the CFT side?
So let's say just globally, say it's too simple. But if I just have global ADS CFT, then time evolution on the boundary, you know, corresponds to time evolution in the bulk. Right. But would you like to know within this wedge?
No. So there's a region inside, causal region.
Yeah.
And that is encoded, outside this finite region and on the CFT side.
Oh, you want to know about the bulk evolution inside here?
That's right, yeah.
That's probably a very confusing question, yeah.
So any idea?
I don't have an answer to that, yeah. I think down here.
So you're saying that non-local information in the CFT encodes information far from the boundary in the bulk.
That's right.
And then because of the minimal surface kind of conjecture, this applies when the bulk has is not vacuum ADS. So you could make these regions far from the boundary that aren't in the vacuum look like, say an inflating space-time. Is that kind of what your aim is? That you make these regions far from the boundary look like normal cosmology, and then you try and compute non-local things in the CFT, and that tells you about initial conditions? Is that the kind of
The idea of a kind of embedding a cosmology inside ADS and then using ADS CFT is a tempting thing that I once foolishly tried to do, but I think energy conditions essentially prevent you from doing that. We could talk in more detail, but I think this has to be a more modest project of understanding, you know, bulk physics, but I don't think we can literally put, say, slow roll inflation inside ADS. I think that's not possible. Oh, but in response to the first part of your question, I should mention that, I mean, there's a much older literature of saying that non-local operators and the boundary encode stuff near the center of the bulk.
Sorry, you're hiding. So suppose we're considering just a purely Euclidean CFT and a Euclidean ADS, so then I would think there's no such thing as a causal wedge. So what should be the difference between local and non-local operators in that case?
Yeah, well, I would have a hard time really formulating any of these questions in the Euclidean context. You know, for example, the concept of entanglement entropy, it's basically you need to have some kind of codimension two surface to compute that. So it's something that comes in when you have a time slicing. So, well, it'd be interesting to think about whether any of these questions we could learn something from the Euclidean, but so far I don't know.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I was just trying to think. I mean, you know, this claim that correlation functions of local operators depend on only what happens inside this wedge. I mean, you know, so if I then put the CFT in a thermal state, then we're adding a horizon deep in the interior of this space-time, which is, you know, not covered by this little wedge you're drawing. You know, I guess I'm very skeptical of this claim that correlation functions of local operators only depend on the geometry inside this little patch near the boundary. You know, that's just telling you about the UV of their theory. You know, what would happen if you put it in a thermal state, we're adding a horizon deep in the interior? You know, you wouldn't see this just by looking at this little wedge near the boundary you're drawing.
Okay, let me see if I understand your question. I mean, if I know in the bulk correlation functions inside that wedge, then that's enough to determine the local correlators in the boundary.
Yeah.
Now, it might be that the kind of the natural state for those correlators there depends on whether you have a black hole over here.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so that's a choice of state, but it, I think it is a correct statement that the bulk physics in this wedge determines the
right.
Local boundary correlators.
Yes, yeah, so we'd rather say, if you give me the correlators on the boundary theory, then we can reconstruct the geometry in this wedge.
Mm-hmm.
But we could also reconstruct it anywhere else in the interior just by... Oh, I see, yeah, right, okay, yeah.
Okay, so we'll meet back at 10 to 11, and let's thank Ben again.